Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up. A new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. Na 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 na. We gotta change it, yeah, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, just you and me.
Wake up, everybody. This is Missing Pages of History. We're going to try to wake up everybody today by adding another page to the Missing Pages of History books. Not a book, but books, many books, where our pages have been left out. And what we're going to do today is feature the major theme, which is information on the classes. That's right, our theme today will be on, our feature theme today will be on information on the classes. Like always, Missing Pages of History is a radio program dedicated to the underserved communities. You will hear views and perspectives that will often will not be given the opportunity to speak in the major mediums. But today, as always, we provide with you information that we hope will be used as a tool to help make our community, help make our people, and help humanity a better place. Yes, Brother Teddy was correct. We must change and teach a new way. And to talk about teaching a new way, we have a historian, an analyst, and a member of MPH, who will be giving his perspectives on issues that are important to our communities. We will first start off with the first segment that we'll call Breaking News. And and our historian, our analyst, and our contributor, Emmanuel. Like always, we'd like to welcome you to Missing Pages of History. Welcome.
Welcome. Good afternoon.
Emmanuel, one of the things about Missing Pages of History, we come with different perspectives that many times are not shared in the major media. Now, when we talk about breaking news, one of the breaking news issues we're going to deal with is this question of the sex scandals, sexual assaults and abuses that have been claimed or has been announced to the world that many women who have been victimized by men of power, particularly in the political arena inside the U.S. right now. Can you talk a little bit in terms of how you see this narrative and the sex scandals that are going on today as relate to Ray Moore, Alabama, the ongoing saga with Donald Trump? Then we also have politician, Senator Al Franken. What is your assessment on these sex scandals?
Well, it's amazing that it's brought to the forefront now. This has been going on quite some time. But women, again, 40 years ago, no one believed them, basically. A woman's rights are not as strong, they weren't as powerful as they are today. They weren't in the mainstream, you might say, of Wall Street and also the common street. So this is very getting to be very common today, but those things did happen. From the Weinsteins of the world in Hollywood to, you might say, in New York, Wall Street, basically the women were the, you might say, the female prophet power. Women were not in power, you might say, like they are today 40 years ago. And they're coming to the front more and more and more now. Corruption in these areas, especially in the media, and we saw Fox News, people coming out against that. But again, this has been there. But women are very strong. They're 55% of the population now. And they hold about 35% of the most powerful jobs. They're governors, they're senators, you know, they're in Congress, they're judges on the Supreme Court. This is something basically new to have multi of women that are very powerful. The Oprah Winfrey's of the world, very powerful women. But these scandals are, they're very malicious. They're very criminal. Sexual assault, you see, with the abuse that women have been taking over the years. It's kind of like it's coming to the forefront. With Al Franken, he admitted, and also there's a picture showing him basically what he was doing. Of course, he's apologized numerous times. It happened, I think, 2006, quite some time ago. But still, that's not forgiving. Apology. It's just words. They apologize for slavery. Just words. It happened. We know it happened. And we're trying to write it out the history books, especially in the state of Texas. So things that happen, we don't like negativism. And we try to destroy it some type of way. Through legislative branches, through historians, we try to either twist it or put it in, you might say, try to mangle it some type of way or try to piecemeal it. Al Franken admitted to what he did, basically. Donald Trump has never admitted that 13 women can't be wrong. It just can't happen. But again, he's the president. He's a pathological liar. So you know what he's all about. And of course, he had the tape that shows what he do and what he's all about. But they still voted for him. But America puts up with this. America puts up with this. We put up with prejudice. We put up with slavery for 275. We put up with discrimination. We put up with these negatives and say how great we are. I'll make America great again. Well, well, well. We are the best of the worst. I'm going to repeat that. We're the best of the worst. Now, that's pretty good when the world is what way it is. But we're the best of the worst. We go to the senators trying to raise Moore down to Alabama. They still going to support him regardless. He's just that type of person. Kicked off the, I think the judge has been a couple of times. He's against everything. But they still like that because we're like that. America's like that. We're a racist nation. Racism is here to stay. It's not going anywhere to integrate the money. As long as the money stays separate like it is today, as long as you got the superior type, inferior type thing, what they preach every day through some type of coded language they do, it's here to stay. It's here to stay in capitalism. It's part of, it's the forefront of capitalism. So racism has to stay in place. He'll probably get elected. I hope he don't. People maybe come to their common sense, but they always put God up there in Christianity and put this, I'm a Christian, this. You're not no Christian. But a Christian you wouldn't have racism. You wouldn't have discrimination. Things that you would not have. You're a Christian. So stop, you know. You got a Republican religion. That's what you got. And you talk about the, again, to talk about Mr. Moore again, he is not denying anything. He's just saying, basically, you know, they lied to this and that. The famous Republicans, you know, they just lie, lie, lie. All they know how to do is lie. Don't know anything else. Their truth is a lie. And back to Donald Trump, I forgot how many late women this was. I think it's like 16 or 17. All of them lied. He should be on whatever it takes. He should resign himself and made a video. He can lie about the video, whatever that was there. Only they didn't lie about it. But they should, like I said, they should have quizzed him on the video. That was him. He couldn't say it was somebody else. If that voice wasn't there, it was just written type thing, it would say it was not him. He's just that type of liar. He tells one lie.
Was it me?
Well, somebody faking my fake news. That video was fake, but see, that's not fake. That's his whole thing. It's fake. And the same thing this young man is saying down in Alabama that is fake. At least I believe Al Franklin. Al Franklin said, you know, I did that. 2006. Yes, old. But like I said, they didn't come out before. These scandals are going to continue. They're not going to stop because it's in the fabric. It's the fabric of the Caucasian culture. It's been that way since biblical times. It's been that way. It's not going to ever stop. Sex slaves is what it's all about. Always will be. Did it on the plantations. We have a group of people, about 80% of us, you know, basically at European, you might say European ethnicity, you might say European, you know, complexion. 80% of America is like that. Why? Because, again, the rape. This is what they do. This is what they do. They're never going to stop this. Prostitution in the Bible, it came forefront. It's what they do. Women are basically a symbol of a man can use against the power that they have. Power, money, and privilege. And lawyers. They pay lawyers to lie for them. That's what they're getting paid for. They will say, what am I paying you for? you get me out of this mess. Some of them admit to it, like Weinstein. It's just things that we did. I lived in Hollywood, you might say, California, L.A., for 25 years. Got a little bit into the movie, you know, dealing with movie people. This is what they do. This is automatic. This is automatic. This is what they do. You want to make it. They'll tell you that. And again, the powers may be, they'll stop you in any way they can. So these scandals will be coming from different ranges. They study from Congress. Of course, congressional people are coming. It's just a matter of how they want to do it, or when they want to do it. And we got powerful women lawyers now, like that will come up and will come up and prosecute these cases if there's criminal elements involved. Congress has paid off, I think they said $15 million they've already paid off to keep the congressmen sort of clean. Well, this is what they do. This is what they do. The word secretary, it means you have the power to touch and to feel, to grab, if you're important or you got power. Like Donald Trump said, he just exposed it. He put it out there for us. Well, these scandals are going to continue. So get used to it, people. These scandals are here to stay.
Emmanuel, before we make a transition to our next topic under breaking news, I would like to get your feedback on how do you view, or what does it say when a woman refuses to recognize that maybe their husband may have participated in that kind of behavior? Because I see, based upon the so-called media, that many women are still standing beside their man, irregardless, if it is the truth. What you make up women coming to support these men who have all these allegations?
Well, that is their devotion. That is their, that man is their economy. So most of them not working, not doing anything. They're at home, basically. The man is their economy. That's why he's allowed to do what he wanted. The Bible speaks of adultery. Why do you think the Bible spoke of adultery, the Ten Commandments? Why the Bible think, you know, thou shalt not kill, things that we do. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not lie. All these things we do. These things we violate. And these guys think they talk about Christianity. Everything relates to a Christian. Christian this and Christian that. Everything is evangelical. Please. Evil. That's what it is. Evil evangelical. It's all about. So we don't admit to it, but that's what it's all about. They're women going to stand by their man regardless. They devoted to him regardless. They devoted to the lying, the cheating. This all accepted under their culture. I think go back to Solomon. He had 700 wives, 300 concubines, 500 children. This accepted. They look at that one as accepted. David, I mean, look at the adultery here. So it's accepted on the Christianity. It's all accepted. Some countries up on the different religious, 3 and 4 and 5 women. Look at the cult of the Mormons, same thing. I mean, just look at some of this stuff. All up on the religious, not up on religion. It's all devilish type thing. It's not Christianity. But they turn it into that. They don't fear God. They fear the devil. They ain't worried about God because God is very docile. He's forgiving. This is what they think to be doing all the time. So this is normal. This is a normal habitat. This is normal for women that they know their husband done did wrong. Some of them are strong, and they leave regardless. They have they can do some other things. But these women that married these congressmen, they can't do anything else, basically. They're just out there. They like that good living. They like that privileged life. They like that. And they get absorbed by that and becomes a part of their environment. It becomes a part of their social stratification. part of their livelihood. That's why they do that. They are very devoted, or they might get abused. Some already been abused. They're afraid. These are some afraid ladies out there. I look at their wives come to the podium. They are afraid. They are afraid of their husbands. They are afraid of this power. Because they can do some things, I tell you. If you can hold on to slavery for 275 years, this is nothing. And don't pay nobody. And disrespect them the whole time. And call them three-quarters of a human being. There's nothing upon the veil of imagining what this guy, this European American, this Caucasian, can do. He is just that devilish.
Emmanuel, as you look at the statistics today, you see where the wealth between the haves and the have-not, the rich and the wealthy, and the poor and the oppressed is being widened. Now, given this discussion and this debate on this Trump administration tax reform proposal that recently was voted upon in the House, give me your assessment. What are some of the things the people need to know in terms of the nature of this so-called proposal, tax proposal, and who do you consider the winners and the losers as they try to push this new tax proposal into law, maybe into law? Who you see as the winners and losers? What's in this package that people need to know?
Well, at the moment, it's got to go to the Senate, and it passed in the House. Passed sort of narrowly. I think 20-some senators didn't vote for it. Some didn't vote, of course, and 17 opposed it. Republicans, the Democrats, and didn't vote for it at all because, you know, this is a I'd say a hoax bill. This taxing is full of trickery. And again, it's devastating. There's no winners and losers here at the moment, but you might say the winners are the rich. Always will be. This is capitalism. Capitalism is not going to make any poor person a winner. Middle class and below winners. They're not going to deal with that. But capitalism is not structured on that. Not structured on poor. It's structured on the haves. Not structured on the have-nots. So the winners, of course, will be the rich as usual. Richer get richer, people say. It's not a saying, but it's what it is. There's plenty of line items to it. The middle class that owned most of the homes won't be able to write their mortgage off, interest off anymore. I think they've taken some of the Medicare and Medicaid. They're going to that little bit. I have no idea what they're going to do with that. Over a 10-year period, they're talking about $338 billion. The numbers are not there. Like they're lying on both sides to a certain extent. But the Republicans are trying to pass the bill, doing way more lying. It don't benefit the middle class or the poor at all, basically, in the long run. We're talking about 5 years, 7 years, 10 years. It's hard to predict all that. But again, as we look at this bill, as you go through the Senate, you have less people in the Senate. I think it's 100 people in the Senate. You got better minds. Better minds. There are more economists there. There are more lawyers there. There's more accountants there, CPAs there in the Senate, that is in the House of Representatives. So let's take a look at this thing. But right now, as I look at the tax, as I read the tax bill, it's not fruitful for the poor people. $75,000 seemed to be where I drew my line at, because that's where you can actually get loans for houses, cars, this type of thing. You can't see people understand that the economy is based on consumer purchasing. If you're not able to buy, then that's the problem. Buying creates jobs. Of course, you're buying the product that are being made. So It's consumer purchasing. That's what makes an economy. That's what creates jobs. There's no trickle-down effect from the rich. The rich save money, invest money. That's all they do. They spend money, but again, they get it back through, by tax write-offs. So if you close the corporate loophole, you close some of the loopholes and make this $100,000 or more, then we can do some things. It's more understandable that you benefit the poor. You got to get the wages up from $7.25 an hour. What can you buy with $7.25 an hour when over 35% of the country makes less than $10? You got to get the wages up to $15 an hour for people to afford things. You know, to buy a car opposed to a used car. You might say a very, very used car. I'm going to say very, very. I mean, a car that's 5 years old or more. And that's what the $7.25 buy. A 10-year-old car, though, is having trouble over getting fixed. So they stay in the pool house. So these are kind of things we have to look at. You're living from paycheck to paycheck. That means you're not middle class. I'm going to talk about the different classes later on. As we go on, I'm going to explain these different classes of people. And we're in a class society. But again, the taxes, no winners and losers. The winners seem to be the rich. They're going to win because, again, you make $1 million a year, you pay taxes on $300,000. You still got $700,000 left. Who would like to be in that predicament? I think everybody. Well, if you're making $15,000 a year and you pay taxes of $1,200 or $1,000, you ain't got but $13,000 or $14,000 if you have no money left. So a person pays $1 million in this. I think this thing also, you can write their jet planes off. Are we crazy? Well, this is what this bill got in, taxing only 20%. That other 35% to keep this country going has to come from somewhere. I must tell you again, most people don't know this. 1% of America know what it takes to run this government. $350 billion per month. You can't get that. You got to get it from somewhere. If you cut taxes back down to 20% for the corporate giants, that's our problem. You can't do that. Because this bowl's still going to stir with the same $350 billion plus. And when these storms come and these fires come, that's $350 billion plus per month. So I think Puerto Rico's asking for $90 million. I think they're doing $44 billion. They have $90 billion, to reconstruct what they have in Puerto Rico. We're not talking about Texas. We're not talking about Florida. Well, Harvey, we're not talking about the Harvey storm. I think they allocated $44 billion. And most of that's going to, of course, places here. It's more expensive to do it, of course, in Puerto Rico. Because you got the water in front, you got the ocean in front of you. So they're going to make it cost more regardless. So you're talking about winners and losers, host. The winners are the rich. The winners are the upper middle class. We're talking about $250,000 and above. They're the winners. The people that make $15,000 a year, $20,000, $25,000, and $30,000, they're going to pay the bulk of the taxes. They're the purchasing people because they purchase what's necessary. They keep the Walmarts going. They keep the Targets going. That's where they purchase at. They don't keep Fifth Avenue going. They don't keep Saks or Fifth Avenue going. Those are the rich people buy less stores. Saks don't have 500 stores. 600 stores like Walmart don't need that. Their shoppers are basically $7.25 to $12 an hour consumer. That's who shops there. And it's going to hurt the poor people, the lower, I call it the working class people, more than anyone else. It will not hurt the people that itemize their taxes. It will hurt the ones that do the short form. And 25% of people that itemize their taxes. And that's less than 1% African Americans.
At this time, y'all listen to the voice of Missing Pages of History. We're going to take a station break. But before we take a station break, Emmanuel, and then we'll come to some callers who've been waiting real patiently, we'd like to go to our segment where we like to inform our listening audience to check out some upcoming events or stories that are happening in our community and world. There was recently an event or articles that were talk about in Chicago where there was a large number of police officers framing young black men and putting them in, incarcerating them out of trumped-up charges. There was also a story that's been developing about Pete Brazil, I mean Donna Brazil, the owner, the commissioner of the NFL. He is requesting some kind of package, some kind of increased pay raise, some kind of compensation that he wants to receive as being a commissioner of the NFL. I think in terms of discussing some of the issues you just raised earlier about how the wealthy look out for itself, I would just like to have maybe your comment on this issue on how police officers are creating frame-up charges against young men in Chicago and locking them up, and the commissioner asking for some kind of compensation, lifetime compensation. Can you share just a little bit of that aspect with our listening audience? Then we'll go to the break, and when we come back, we'll take care of some calls. Emmanuel?
Let me just very briefly, I think the commission was $49.5 million per year, almost $200 million in a lifetime health insurance for his family lifetime after he leaves the job and he wants a private jet. It's a compensation package you want. He has already collected almost $200 million already. We're talking about a job that's probably about $3 to $5 million. We're talking about $49.5 million. He wants his life. The players don't even have that. He don't even play. He just walks around and give orders. And that's Mr. Roger Goodell. It's a, you know, $16 billion business. You know, 1% of that would be basically, what, $16 million, 1.1% for $16 million. That's not a $16 million job. He's not doing anything. He can pay his own insurance for lifetime with that kind of money. He can buy his own jet plane lifetime to travel around in. So I think that's absurd. But again, this is capitalism. This is what they do. The police department in Chicago, I think 23 people got released because of planting drugs one and two and three times. People haven't even do anything with drugs at all, but again, they got to incarcerate so many people. I'll let people know what goes on with this incarceration thing. Understand that with these private prisons, a cell has to be filled with a body to get paid. If nobody's in there but the cell, taxes pay for that empty cell. Taxes. State taxes. Now, if you got a person in that cell, then, of course, there's compensation also. But at least you have a person in there. Paying for an empty cell, you don't get as much as a person in the cell. The compensation is not as great because you got to feed that person, clothe that person. You got to have a, you know, guard for that person. You got to employ more people. So, again, empty cells do not make money. And incarceration. Understand exactly what goes on in this prison system. And it's almost 78% of African Americans and Hispanics, you might say, in this system, in these private prisons that make a lot of money, who's actually owned by Wall Street. They own these private prisons. They're big time investors. And the vendors, the McDonald's, the Sears, they're the vendors, the Verizons of the world, the T-Mobiles. They are the people in the Sprint. They control these prisons. They make money off these prisons. And like they got workforces that make furniture in these prisons at 28 cents an hour. Understand, I'm going to do a thing on incarceration, exactly what goes on up in there. But those are two that enlighten me a little bit. It's very Roger Goodell, NFL, wants $49.5 $6 million a year. What is he doing? What kind of job is that one? Then, of course, you want that compensation package. Then for the police department in Chicago, again, drugs, is, you know, you can plant drugs, and they do it all the time. This is all about corruption in the capitalist system. Things that make money in the federal, what the federal government would pay for. $350 billion money has to go somewhere. And they make sure they get that money. We participate in 7% of that money. 7% of $350 billion. That's all African Americans get out of that. I would enumerate that for where that $7 billion, that's 7%. That's all we get. And we're 12% of the population. So we should at least get 12% of it, not 7. They say we get a little bit less than 7. I think it's like 6.7 that actually spent on African Americans per se. And the rest of it goes to the European Americans.
And one more check it out story we'd like to listen to audience to check out. And I'd like to get your brief feedback on Emmanuel Eales, the Donna Brazile story. Just recently, she published a book talking about the inner workings of the Democratic Party and some of the issues concerned that she had with the Clintons. What is your general take on that particular issue?
Well, I can say you put in a little capsule. Donna Brazile was basically she was the chairman of the Democratic Party, but he wasn't in charge of the money, where the money was, you know, was allocated. Hillary Clinton, I think the Democratic Party had $24 million in debt. And Hillary Clinton, I think she loaned the, every month she would loan them $3.5 million. So you might say, you loan the money, you're going to have a lot of say-so, or her people will. Not so much she doing it, but again, she's controlling what's going on. And again, allocating the money to certain areas that they feel they could win. They didn't allocate the money to areas they feel they could not win. So again, Donna Brazile was saying, well, I had to raise my own money in a sense. I had to speak to people that had money so I could get money. So that was that's all about. It was about that. It wasn't too much about anything. Everything else was just, you might say, political jargon that happens all the time. But again, if Hillary Clinton would have probably won the election if the Russians didn't interfere with what happened and WikiLeaks and all that, all the things that happened during that particular time. I've never seen the election like this before. The election was totally a fraud. It was fraud created by Donald Trump and his campaign staff. They did a fantastic job, the red states and the blue states, turning blue states into red states or purple states, whatever you want to call it. But again, Donna Brazile thing was allocation of the money, and she had no control where the money should go. The printing things, the marketing things they should have done. She wanted to fight back more than Hillary wanted to fight back with Hillary's staff. So, well, don't do that. Well, if a guy called me crooked Hillary, he's a pathological liar. I'm going to call him a pathological liar. Every time I talk about him, if I email anything or if I Twitter anything, it's going to be pathological liar. So I think this is what Donna Brazile wanted to do, is fight back. You know, you can't take the high ground all the time. Sometimes we take the high ground too many times. So the high ground is not the way to take sometimes. You got to take the lower ground too sometimes to fight back. They don't just make the mess over you. And that's what happened with doing that campaign. Hillary took the high ground too often. Took the high ground too often. And that's Donna Brazile's thing, that she took the high ground too often. I think the polls was not engaged like they should, in depth like they should. I think the polls told her a bunch of jokes, some of them again, because the way the money was allocated, you didn't get the truth out of the polls. They were distorting this thing all the time. And Donald Trump made sure, like Donald Trump said, the election was being rigged, and he rigged it.
Okay, on that note, you listen to Missing Pages of History. We're going to take a station break. When we come back, we're going to open up our phone lines. To our listening audience, if you'd like to call in and make comments as relate to our topics today, we're dealing with the sex scandals. We're dealing with this tax reform proposal to be presented by the Trump administration. We even talk about this need to have a package, have a retirement package for the commissioner of NFL in terms of what does that mean to everyday workers. These are some of the issues we are discussing, and when we come back, we will open up our phone lines by calling in at 818-337-0016. Please hit 1, and we will acknowledge your last number. After we have our call-ins, we're going through our feature story tonight, which is information on the classes. Information on the classes. You definitely want to listen to this analysis. So what we're going to do right now, we're going to take a station break. We come back and phone lines. This is Missing Pages History.
I believe in all.
like to welcome you back to Missing Pages of History. We just took a station break. And before we went on our station break, we were receiving analysis on various issues and topics that impacts our community from our historian, our analyst, and our contributor, Emmanuel Joyner. We may invite our listening audience, if you have any comments and views on some of the issues that was raised this evening, dealing with the sex scandals, the tax reform that are being proposed by the Trump administration, this whole thing about the commissioner, NFL commissioner want a new salary pack to not only increase his money but have a retirement where he have insurance, as well as the ongoing entrapment of young African men by police officers out of Chicago. These are just some of the issues that has been shared with you today. We will now open up our phone lines at 818-337-0016. So we do ask you to make your comments. Keep them in the realm of 2 to 3 minutes, no more. So right now we have a listener who is on the line who would like to give his views and comments on some of the things that we'll discuss this evening. We bring in caller number 6029. Caller 6029. Welcome to Missing Pages of History.
Yeah, hi. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call. One of the things I wanted to mention is how the economy functions. One of the things when we talk about consumer debt, we have to understand that consumer debt is 7% of the GDP in this country, which means that in order for this country economy to expand, then people have to have access to resources in terms of investing in the economy for the economy to expand. But what's happening is that because people don't have access to money, it means that people don't buy into the system. So the overwhelming debt that this country accrues on a yearly basis, even on a quarterly basis, continues to grow. And one thing I think we have to begin to understand is that there are particular implications in terms of this kind of policy. Now, clearly, superimposed upon this policy in terms of consumer debt, you have a situation where they talk about tax break for the wealthy people. They're talking about, by their own admission, a tax break that is going to affect create the national debt by $1.3 trillion per 10-year period. Now, clearly, these policies are not geared toward in terms of, you know, structure, geared towards stimulating the economy. They're geared toward enriching the few and the powerful. Now, and it has a particular ramification for the working people in society. It has particular ramifications for African people in the society. So the question becomes, are they doing this because it's about economics, or are they doing this because it's about power? I always take the position that it don't have a damn thing to do with economics. It has everything to do with power. And as such, that as African people, we have to fundamentally understand that we are at war and that we have to wake up and begin to realize the nature of the beast. And we no longer can feign ignorance or pretend that, in fact, we don't understand what's going on when the reality is right before our eyes. Because it comes down to a question of life and death for African people. So you got a choice. You either fight and die or you don't fight and die. But you got a choice to be made in society. In terms of the police setting up young African men in society, it's nothing new. It's been going on. They're going on since the beginning of the Republic. One of the things is that I think it's important that we have to have organization. We have to begin understanding the police for what they are. They're not here to protect and serve. They're here to protect and serve the wealthy and the powerful. Until we fundamentally understand that reality, we continue to delude ourselves to believing that the cops are here to protect all of us. And that's not the case. The cops are here to protect the rich and the powerful and protect their property. And that's all they're here for. And so that context is very easy for cops to perceive young African men as the other or the enemy. And this is the fundamental problem that we have. Not only the young African men perceived as enemy, but African men, period, is perceived as enemy. I don't give a damn if you're rich, poor, in the middle. If you're an African person, you're perceived as the enemy of the state. And this is the fundamental contradiction that we're confronted with in this society. And I close with that. And thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for your comments, Carlo. Again, you're listening to Africa. You are listening to Missing Pages of History. If you have any questions in the comments, please hit 1, and we acknowledge your last 4 numbers. Emmanuel, you heard a caller in response before we go through our major theme for tonight, which is dealing with information on the classes.
We just comment on the caller just called in.
Yes, any comments or thoughts on what you just heard?
Well, like I said, not as I will not be as, you know, we know what capitalism is all about. Again, that no, we're not an enemy. That's not true. We were brought here for a piece of property, and that's who we are, and that's what they understand. The 1%, you know, runs everything basically, and like I said, the rich in power. That's what it's all about. But it's part of the base of capitalism, and we have to understand that. Understand capitalism first. It has quite a few components. It's a tree of power, and the components of power are conspiracy, corruption, racism, conservatism. It's all of these things you can put at the root of capitalism. But the basic thing of capitalism, you have to have racism to have capitalism. And again, we don't keep racism. Racism is here to stay. It's not going anywhere. Because you cannot have capitalism without it. The have and the have not. If the 1% owns almost everything of the basis, they are the base of owning everything. And that's where we are. We're going to stay that way. They own the banks. And the main thing, they get paid. And nothing you're going to do about that. It's not going to change that paradigm. We're never going to change that. Incarceration of African Americans, because they still think you're a second-class citizen. And their job is to make you sick, basically, because you're guinea pigs. They're going to make sure you make a profit off of you there, and they're going to make a profit off you in incarceration. These two things, are they going to make money off of you? Again, only 4% of us own our homes. 4%, that's all. They're going to make sure that you are not part of this equation of capitalism. They're going to keep you as subhuman as much as they possibly can. Because,
okay,
again,
let me stop you right there, Emmanuel, and take this caller. He's been waiting patiently.
Okay.
Caller 4298. Caller 4298. Your question or comment, please.
Yes, I think it's a very interesting subject. Definitely 1% of the population of the world owns over 50% of the wealth of the world. And that's the latest figures out. So capitalism is still running amok around the world. I think it would be remiss if we didn't mention the situation in Zimbabwe and get some analysis of that. Thank you.
Right. Thank you, Carlo, for your comments, Carlo. Right now, what we're going to do, we're going to go to our features today. Emmanuel, when we talk about all of these issues, and we talk about this question of classes, when we talk about information on the classes, I would just raise one fundamental question with you, and I'll let you give your narrative on this issue, which is, how does a person go from the middle class? Talk about that phenomenon.
Well, what we're going to talk, well, students, start off with where you get started to the middle class. You have to start somewhere, the starting point. Students usually don't think of themselves as a class. I call them pre-class, because they to get into the workforce, pre-to graduate college, pre-everything is pre. Because they have not yet entered the labor force. So I call them pre-class. They can only hope to become part of the middle class after they graduate. And that means, what that means, becoming a wage earner. Which I impolitely I call them the working class. So I've gave you basically two classes, the pre-class, the middle class. I'm giving you a third class now, the working class. And this is how this works. As soon as they take out a student debt, a student loan, they become part of the economy. So you're not a part of the economy per se, up under your parents, this type of thing. you're a small part of the economy, just purchasing things, basically. But now you're becoming part of the economy because you just got a loan, a student loan, okay? Now you're becoming the fourth class called the debtor class. You weren't in the debtor class before, but now you're in the debtor class. See, and to be a debtor, one needs a means to pay. And the student means to pay is out of the wages and salaries that they're going to earn after they graduate. See, students get an education, they can qualify for a middle-class job. Now, I've given you five classes. We're talking about the different classes. I'm qualifying these classes. Well, what is the middle class? See, the middle class consists of the widening sector. Listen very carefully. The widening sector of the working class that qualifies for bank loans, payday loans, but a lifetime of debt. So the middle class today is a debtor class. Understand how I'm going to string this thing. See, we can shed the crocodile tears we want to shed, but the growth of the U.S. employment in the Bush years were very detrimental to the economy, losing over 800,000 jobs per month. What happened? The economy was not bailed out, but the banks were. The banks were bailed out, not the economy. The stimulus that Barack Obama came into the office, the stimulus only helped just a moment. That's like putting a gallon of gas in the car to make it stop, effing them stop. That's all that was. Now, I'm going to full tank of gas. The economy didn't get bailed out. The banks did. There's another class called the financial class. I done gave you seven classes now. And what's the financial class role? See, the thing about that is the rise in volume of debt. I'm going to tell you something that's going to blow your mind. This is mind-blowing. Interest and fees, the two, they yield more money. They yield more money than everything else. That's how they make the banks make their money. And what's going on with that is that it leaves the economy of goods and services just languishing. The money is made in the banking world. And again, it's made on the volume of debt, interest and fees. Late fees and penalties now yield more money than the credit card companies, more than they receive in interest charges. This is kind of money that we're getting from late fees and penalties, not interest. They yield more than interest. See, these are startling things that we should know. Can you get a loan and what happens here? See, and the banks will tell you, they always got to validate something, like everything. If they validate, for incarceration, everything is validated. Why they got to have so many prisons and all this stuff is validated. It's probably with lies most of the time, but it's validated. If you get banking textbooks, what they're going to tell you? That interest and fees are compensation for risk. This is how the lawyers fight you. This is how capitalism is basically fought, especially in the banking world. This is what they tell you, if you don't know no better. But they tell you this. And once you say, you nod your head. when a bank takes on risk, that bank is out of business. The risk has to be backed up. Who backs it up? The government. They socialize the risk, and they privatize the profits. This is what's happening in our U.S. economy. We had junk mortgages. We had bad debt. Debt was left on the books when Obama took the office. We had the war debt. We had the debt from China, debt from Japan. That's why we have the debt we have now, approaching $20 trillion, because we borrowed. And China exchanged the borrowing, like I said last time. When he went to China, we talked about trade. I think a caller called him. It was about trade. Trade was the number one thing on the was trade. So we have to understand what goes on here. We can't compensate talking about imperialism and all this other stuff. That's not what's going on. Let's talk on a whole nother book. What goes on here is really what takes place in the banks. Banks don't take risks. I don't care what book you read, banks don't take risks. That's the tallest building in town. Because what town you go in, the insurance company, the banks are the tallest buildings in town. That should tell you something. We don't observe and take notice of that and try to say, well, this is what, why are they the tallest buildings in town? Because they make the most money. They're the money makers. And again, they anticipate the U.S. economy all the time. So you can't recover when you're on the weight of junk bonds and other bad debts that we have. That's why we're in some of the debt we're in today, because of that. I think the debt for students is $1.3 trillion. We can't come up under that. That's part of that $20 trillion. See, the government basically guaranteed all student debt. And these things are, all these things are buried, they're buried in such indebtedness that the government will never come out of this. We can't come out of this. You can get taxes all day long. We get into trillions of dollars. That's a lot of money. We're not talking about billions, and maybe we're talking about trillions. See, nobody's a trillionaire. We got, I think it's 1,800 billionaires. They basically $2 billion and above in assets. See, we have to understand some things that we don't understand as being the middle class. We're wage earners. We got a fictitious economy. It's a debt economy because you're a debtor. And most of the time, the government will pay the banks if there's a recovery. So the bank sort of stands for everything. There's a way to write it off. There's a way to get rid of your debt and this and that. You file bankruptcy. Well, Donald Trump, a lot of them do just file bankruptcy all the time. The law is invented for that type of thing. So that means the bank took a risk and they lost it, the risk. So you file bankruptcy and the bank writes that debt off. Therefore, the bank doesn't pay very little taxes. We said we're the most taxed, country, 35%. That's a lie. It's just out there. See, we file our income taxes. We get back a refund. We don't count that. Oh, I paid $21 in tax. You got a refund back of $14. Subtract that from the 21. You got a refund back. So you didn't pay $21 in taxes. You paid 21 minus $14. That's your recovery. So if you look at mortgage lending, real estate mortgage lending, students who just see them getting a job, hope to start a family, at least join the middle class. So the most typical criteria of middle class life is today's world apart from having a college education, to own a home. Once you own a home, you're in debt. You become the debtor class. So I've named you seven classes. Understand the classes and which one that you're in. No one can buy a home basically without getting a mortgage. and the price of a mortgage is to pay up to 43% of one's income for 30 years. So I'm giving you math that you understand what's going on, people, listeners. See, and you're in a rig, you might say a gig economy. Well, I'm giving you perspective of working life in today's world. And the banks know this, know how unlikely it is that workers actually be able to earn enough to carry the cost of their education, because you're paying back a student loan. And banks understand this, and real estate debt. So the cost of housing is so high, and taking care of home is so high, the price of education is very high. So amount of debt that workers must pay off the top of every paycheck is so high that American labor is priced out of the world market, except for military hardware. Everything else is priced out. But military hardware is sold to who? The Saudis and U.S. protectorates at a high price. So that's the only thing. That is the only thing. Only thing that's priced out the world market. Military hardware, because they sold to who? They don't need credit. They pay for it cash. That's the Saudis and other U.S. protectorates. So the banks insist that the government pretends that housing as well as education, these loans are not involved any risk for bankers. I'm going to repeat that. The banks insist that the government pretends that housing as well as education loans are not involved in any risk for bankers. See, because the Federal Housing Authority guarantees mortgages that absorb up to the 40% of the applicant's income. They absorb that. 40% of your income goes towards your mortgage, basically. Income is not going these days. Job loss is still here. Middle class labor is being downsized to minimum wage. McDonald's and other fast food, this is gig labor. Uber, these are gig laborers. That's all they are. Not for you to buy a house or buy this. It's not going to happen with that. And again, the banks, again, compensate. Governments compensate the banks for the risk that the government itself it bears. So I'm telling you again, people, as I do another segment on this in my next radio show, I will go a little bit further into debt and, might say, wage slaves. I'm going to go a little bit deeper into that. So again, I'm preconditioning for this. Joining this working class. The middle class, again, is a debtor class. So deep in debt that once they manage to get a job, they have no leeway to go on strike, much less to protest against bad working conditions. This is dramatized, I call it traumatized worker effect of debt. And this is what we got. Understand what I told you today is the different classes I've given you, and I gave you the conditions of each class. Which class are you in? And most of us in that debtor class. Host, I hope that people understand exactly what I talked about. How do you, do students think about the future in these terms, and how do they think of their place in the world? These are the questions I'm asking them. And the next show I will probably give you, we're going to talk about ninjas. And what a ninja? Ninja means no income, no jobs, no asset. This is the ninja. And I'm going to talk about the ninja next time, host.
Okay, man, I have one question in reference to the subject. And then we go into station break, but I would like to talk a little bit about Mr. Page's history, what's happening with the MPH and how people can help. But one question to the subject of this audience is that, listening to that analysis, one could arrive at the conclusion that the whole concept of wage earning put you in the condition of being enslaved, slave-like. How you respond to that assessment?
Repeat that host again. I didn't quite get the last of that. What you say?
Listen to the conditions that you just described. When you talk about a wage earner, someone with a wage, it's another type of condition of having you functioning like a slave. You come in daddy, you come slave to the system. It's a modern day slavery. It's a modern day slavery.
Yeah. It's not a modern day slavery. What it is, you're slave to your debt. You're working for your debt, basically. You're working for the bank. And again, 1% of the people that run the world, you might say 50% of the whole world is owned by, 1% of the people who are rich. America's controlled by 1% of the banks, basically, people who are dealing with the banks. That's who you're paying the interest to. You're paying interest to the banks. The banks, like I said again, they take no risk. If banks take a risk, they're fired. Banks do not take risk. And again, the only risk we don't accept is the military. Again, we sell hardware to Saudis and our protectors. That's cash money. They have money. So that's the only, other than that, is debt. Everything we buy is on debt. Cars on debt, house on debt, charge car, everything is debt. And I told you before, the late fees and the penalties, they make more money than the interest. They've exchanged places. They've exchanged places now. So you're not, like, again, you're a slave earner. I get into that when I talk about the ninja. So the government got assets. They have the power to tax. These are the kind of things the government have power to do. And they're going to do this. Because, again, taxes create over 100 million jobs. You need taxes to survive in a capitalist system. Police officer retire, teacher retire, you have to hire another teacher. Now you're paying out two salaries, basically. The retired one, you're not getting no production out of, and you're paying for the one that's working. So that's why taxes going to increase. Because you're paying two people. The fireman retires, and one takes his place. You're paying two people. The congressman retires, another congressman takes his place. You got to pay him, sitting in the seat, and you got to pay the one that's retired. So this is why we're where we are. And who had those jobs? Who gets the retirement money? You got some states, the whole state is based on retirement. Florida's a retirement state, Arizona. That's where their money comes from. That's where their money comes from. So you have to understand that. But again, you remain independent on banks. Bank cards. Bank everything, mortgage bank, car bank. This is what we do. We bank on banks, and they're not going to take risks. And they depend on their employees.
At this time, you're listening to Miss Just History. We're going to take a station break, and we come back. There's a little bit about his MPH with some of the activities and how you can involve yourself. I'm talking to Daniel Jordan, who is an analyst, historian, contributor to the MPH. We're closing out our program when we come back from this station.
Tennessee. Lord, I've really been real stressed. A game of horseshoes.
Now I see the importance of history. While my people be in the mess that they be, many journeys to freedom made in vain by brothers on the corner playing ghetto games. I ask you, Lord, why you enlighten me without the enlightenment of all my foes? You said, cause I set myself on a quest for truth, and you was there to quench my thirst, but I am still thirsty. Lord, allow me to drink some more. He said, what I am searching for are the answers to all which are in front of me. The ultimate truth started to get blurry. For some strange reason, it had to be. It was all a dream about Tennessee.
Boys and Girls Club and tutorship these kind of things he's trying to do to buy, have, you know, Christmas toy drive, Thanksgiving type things, all of these particular holidays, with some type of feeding, some type of knowledge in the neighborhood. So again, outreach to the neighborhoods. We have another program, that one of our associates, they're involved in. They're on every Tuesday, they visit Assisted Living Home, and they pray for the sick and people. They bring the church to the Assisted Living Home. So I think this is another outstanding program that we have started. They bring church to them, which I think is outstanding. Buying coats for kids. My son, kids at the bus stop in October to December, they would just shake them, didn't have a jacket, just a shirt on. So they would go to Goodwill and would buy them a coat, have it clean. And the next following week, he would take the numbers off the back of their shirts, see what size they wear, and get their name and help. He would buy at least 10 coats from Goodwill, have them cleaned and everything, and have kids, coats for those kids. So we're going to do a coat. We're going to start at this type of thing. I think it was fantastic that he did this, and that's another thing we're going to try to do also, to make sure kids are warm at the bus stop waiting on the buses, just not in their shirt or just a sweater, and we're talking about freezing weather. So that type of thing, we're looking to expanding that on our outreach programs. But, of course, tutorship is very, very responsive to us. We tutor children. I have two kids that I have tutored. They started college at 14. They're making straight A's. So, again, these are the kind of things that that we're doing to make sure they excel in math, they excel in technology, they excel in some of the languages. These are the things on people to look up to and kids to look up to. Look up to a future. Education is the key. But again, after education, ownership is the key. We have to start owning businesses. We can hire our youth. We invest so much in other areas that don't employ. I think they say we employ less than 3 people in the black business, less than 3 people. That's amazing. And we got to do better than that. We got to employ our youth also. We got to stop looking for a lot of help because you're not going to get it. Because I said before, underline this, highlight this. They are not going to integrate the money. The money is not going to integrate, so racism is here to stay. Once they integrate the money, racism goes away. And that's not going. That's in every state. They have different forms. We're going to talk about the different forms, how they basically segregate you and discriminate against you. But these are some of the programs we're looking to and getting people knowledge. You can't get much power. You can get knowledge. Because right now, the power in the capitalist system is not God. It is money. Money is their God. Money is their God. Because you need money to survive. Everybody talk about it's all about the money. Nothing else. Nothing else but the money, the have and the have-nots. And the haves have money, and the have-nots don't.
And also to remind our listening audience, Missing Pages of History will be implementing a snack pack program where we're going to be working with middle school and elementary schools throughout various cities. So we need your support. And we have an open membership drive. You can join us and participate with us. By emailing us that you have an interest in working with MPH, by contacting us at missingpagesofhistory1@yahoo.com. That missingpagesofhistory1@yahoo.com. And finally, thoughts, Emmanuel, closing out the program. We would like to hear your final thoughts for today's program.
Well, we talked about quite a few subjects, and like I said, we're going to keep the scandals. We're going to keep that on the burners. We're going to keep that there. we're going to take a look at the tax reforms to get passed the Senate. I don't think it's going to pass. I think it's, again, there's too many. That's a hoax to a certain extent. There's too many things involved. But closing out on what I was talking about, you know, for half a century, Americans, that's everybody that lives in America, live in the United States of America, we have imagined themselves getting richer and richer by going into debt to buy their own homes, educate the children. This is our mantra. And the riches have turned out to be riches for the banks, bondholders, and other creditors, not for the debtors, the class which we are debtors. And what's the use? What used to be applauded as the middle class turns out, very simply, an indebted working class. Thank you, host.
We thank you, Emmanuel. We thank all of our participants. And, of course, we thank our listening audience, our friends, supporters, and plan givers. We'd like to remind you also, please educate yourself more about the history and goals of MTH by going to our website. Again, look us up at www.mthinc.org. One of our long-term goals that we want to work on is creating a multi-purpose communication center where we can help produce and create historians, filmmakers, writers from our youth so they can record properly, preserve properly our history, our culture, and use it as a means to improve our daily lives and have a greater future. But he who controls your history will control you. But create and control our own history. But this is why we need support. This is one reason why we came to this podcast. Please check out our website. Support us. Until next time, we ask you to continue. Help us fill in our missing pages of history. We care about you. We care about your pages. 2 weeks from now.